This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhaib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And they're here because they were escaping a very dangerous situation in Somalia to find refuge in our country so that they could build a life.
That's U.S. Senator Tina Smith describing how close to 500 Somalis could lose their protection to stay in America. Details coming up.
Also, according to experts, drug dealers, by turning their attention to West Africa, have increased the number of addicts in the region. And it appears the sudden peace between Ethiopia and Eritrea is picking up momentum politically, militarily, and financially.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, following a trend among industrialized nations, hard drugs are now making their way into the hands of West African consumers. With European markets saturated, experts believe drug barons are increasingly turning their attention to the region. That has led to an increase in addicts and the opening of West Africa's first drug rehabilitation center. Sophia Christensen reports from Dakar.
The first time Omar took heroin was in France during the 1980s. As a young Senegalese student in Paris, he was lured to the back alleys of the Rue de Flandre and Gare de Lyon, notorious hotbeds for drugs at the time. Now in his late 50s, Omar, who did not wish to use his real name, says heroin and cocaine are creeping into Senegal's drug scene. I discovered heroin in the West, says Omar, but users in their 20s discovered it here. Experts say drug consumption in West and Central Africa is on the rise. Cannabis is by far the most widespread substance, but hard drugs are becoming more prevalent. The UNODC's most recent estimates for West and Central Africa amount to 1.8 million cocaine users in 2016 and around 1 million heroin users in 2015. Pierre Lapac is the UNODC's regional representative. He says Senegal is a natural transit point for traffickers smuggling drugs to Europe from Latin America. They used to give their accomplices cash, he says, but now they pay in produce. Lapac believes drug lords are purposefully dumping products in the region so that local dealers can charge a price low enough to attract consumers and create a new market. Research done by this reporter on the streets shows that 1 gram of pure cocaine can be purchased for as little as $35, compared to 90 in France. A rock of crack costs less than 10. Drug users are typically male, aged less than 25, and from a middle or lower middle class background, says Lapac. This profile fits perfectly with Africa's emerging population. In Dakar's addiction center, nurses weigh patients and take blood samples. Launched in 2015, it is West Africa's first drug rehabilitation facility and the only methadone administrator in the region. Treatment for heroin addicts, who come to the center every morning for a dose of the medication, is subsidized by the state. Senegal's government took action after a 2011 survey found over 1,300 injectable drug users in Dakar, with an HIV infection rate of more than 9%. The center's director, Idriss Abba, says he received over 2,000 patients over the past 3 years, about a quarter of which were heroin addicts. The profile of patients has diversified, says Ba. We are seeing more young people, and even a small number of women. Outside Ba's office, methadone patients smoke cigarettes as they rest in the shade. A 42-year-old man who tells a story says addicts rarely keep to a single type of drug. Almost everyone smokes cannabis here, he says, and people that take methadone continue to smoke crack. This year, Senegal's main public university started a course for health workers to identify and respond to different forms of drug addiction. Dr. Adama Koundoul heads a psychiatric center in Ziguinchor, the capital of Senegal's southern Casamance region. He observed an increase in the use of hard drugs amongst his patients and traveled to Dakar for training. Koundoul blames lack of regulation and the constant movement of people. Ziguinchor is at a crossroad between Gambia, Guinea and Guinea-Bissau, he says, and it is also a major tourist destination. Experts and health officials agree that Senegal should do more to crack down on the trade. In 2007, Senegal's National Anti-Drug Trafficking Body seized a record 1.2 tons of cocaine near the beach town of Nianing, an area populated with holiday resorts. Smaller quantities are regularly intercepted at the border and destroyed by the authorities. But as new drugs infiltrate the local market, a new battle begins. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Dakar.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is to announce today whether it will extend temporary legal protections to about 500 Somalis who have sought refuge in the United States. Most of those who would be affected live in the state of Minnesota, which is home to the nation's largest group of Somali Americans. Unless it is extended, their protected status will expire in September 17th. About 22 U.S. senators have sent a letter to the Homeland Security Secretary calling for an extension of the protective status for Somali nationals. Senator Tina Smith of Minnesota is leading the efforts. She told Mohammed Hassan with VOA Somali Service that danger still exists in Somalia. She says revoking protective status would send Somali back to Somalia or to other countries, and that it could break families apart, creating a humanitarian crisis.
Along with 21 of my colleagues, I have urged the Trump administration to extend these humanitarian protections. These are, we think, around 500 Somali nationals who live in the United States. They have been here, some of them, for decades, and they're here because they were escaping a very dangerous situation in Somalia to find refuge in our country so that they could build a life. The dangers of being in Somalia still exist right now, and I am doing everything I can to push the Trump administration to extend these protections.
Are these senators all Democrats, or you have some Republicans with you?
The senators that have signed on to my letter are all Democrats. It is a very diverse group of senators from a lot of different states. But this point is that this is an issue that affects states that have Democratic representatives and Republican representatives, and I think we should all be raising our voices demanding that the Trump administration extend these protections for people who are making a real contribution to our communities.
Tell us how or what can possibly happen to them if the administration doesn't renew the TPS.
Well, without this extension of TPS, which is scheduled, the deadline for action is today, but the TPS protections would expire in September, then these Somali nationals who are currently living in the United States would then be in a situation where they'd have to return to Somalia or find refuge in another country. I think about the trauma that this puts families through. It breaks families apart. It means that some people in a family might have to go someplace else while others could stay here. Many of these people would have children that might potentially have been born in the United States that they wouldn't be able to be with if they had to leave. I think it creates a whole other humanitarian crisis here in the United States.
Have you met some of them in Minnesota? And what are they telling you?
I have met many, many Somali people in Minnesota who have told me about this concern and raised this issue. And what I'm always struck by is the courage and resilience that it took for people to leave a country that was, many of them spent, you know, months or even years in refugee camps. And then they came to Minnesota, where we have a large and active and very strong Somali community, and they're such an important part of our community in Minnesota. Most Somali people in Minnesota are not there with this TPS protection. They have other. Many of them are citizens, so it's a relatively small number. But still, for those people, it is a terrible situation to find themselves in.
The State Department issued a travel warning for the people who are traveling to Somalia. That shows that there is a danger there. So
yes.
Do you think this will persuade the administration to extend the TPS?
Well, I hope that it will. The conditions that caused people to leave their home country when they first came to the United States, many of those conditions are still in place. It is still, in many ways, a dangerous place where there are human rights abuses and violence. And I think that it is just unconscionable that we would be sending people back into such an unsafe and dangerous condition.
Are there nationals other than Somalis who are also who are going to be affected by this decision?
There are many groups of other people from other countries who are facing similar deadlines, uncertainty about whether they'll be able to stay in this country where they've made their home.
That was Senator Tina Smith speaking with our colleague, Mohammed Hassan.
The president of the DRC, Joseph Kabila, spoke of his passion for the country in a speech to Parliament today. However, he did not answer the question many people are asking, will he be a candidate in the December presidential election? He did say the elections would proceed as scheduled and the government would pay all costs instead of seeking international aid. He also focused on economic and social issues, such as the fact that the number of school children more than doubled to 22 million since 1997. The president, who took over from his assassinated father in 2001, was to have left office at the end of 2016 when his second term ended. However, his government has repeatedly delayed elections. A vote is now scheduled for December. Candidates are to register between July 25th and August 1st. A large segment of the population is opposed to another term for him, including the influential Catholic Church. There have been numerous protests against him over the past 2 years.
Eleven days before Zimbabwe goes to the polls, most of the presidential candidates gather today in the capital, Harare, to sign a peace pledge. This is the second peace pledge they have committed to in the build-up to the July 30th election. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has more details.
Past elections in Zimbabwe have been characterized by violence. The Catholic Church organization Silveria House invited all presidential candidates to pledge to preach peace as they campaign. Bishop Anselimo Magaya urged the candidates to stick to the pledge.
The value of this signing ceremony, as well as the one that we had with NPRC, is going to be strongly located in walking the talk.
There are 23 candidates for president. However, to some, this year's election is considered a two-horse race between the ZANU-PF candidate, President Emmerson Mnangagwa, and Nelson Chamisa, the candidate for the MDC alliance. However, they were not at the signing ceremony Thursday, and neither sent representatives. Divine Mhambi Wove is the leader of Nationalist Alliance of Patriotic and Democratic Republicans. He said their absence was telling.
There is a gap. There is an emptiness. There are people that are not here. Why are they not here? If I could choose to vote, for now I would know who not to choose right now. Because they make noise, they give us hope. But when we gather like this to shape the future of our country, they are not there.
Supporters of ZANU-PF and MDC have been responsible for political violence in the past. Magaya said it would have been great to have their leaders present.
I would have loved a situation where some of the organs that have been key in perpetrating violence to have also been part of the signing ceremony. Where is the police? Of course, they were here. I would have wanted them to really confess their regrets on the past atrocities. Where is the army? Army should have been here.
In the past elections, Rights organizations blamed some of the violence on the police and military acting for former President Robert Mugabe, who led ZANU-PF. Charity Charamba, a senior assistant commissioner for the Zimbabwe Republic Police, was at the event and gave an update on the violence seen in this election cycle.
This period we've registered more intra-party violence as opposed to inter-party violence. There are more assaults, minor assaults, defacing or tearing of posters, placing posters on top of rivals' posters, placing posters at private properties. All this is contravention to the Electoral Act.
While the two main candidates were absent at the ceremony, they have been preaching peace to their supporters, a move that has largely contributed to a relatively peaceful political environment in Zimbabwe. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
According to the site Internet World Statistics, nearly 7 million Zimbabweans, or about 40% of the country, use the World Wide Web. Of these, 880,000 regularly use Facebook, with others using digital applications such as WhatsApp, Twitter, and Instagram. Young people make up over half of Zimbabwe's population and are a large component of Internet users. With Zimbabwe's elections around the corner, new media is playing a considerable role in spreading information, especially among the urban populace. VOA's Addie Gondo tells us more about how politicians and potential voters are using new media.
Against this background, the Zimbabwe Center for Media and Information Literacy recently held a summit to explore the potential use of new media in civic engagement. The theme of the meeting was reimagining civic engagement, youths, elections, and new media. Participants included new media experts and practitioners, foreign mission officials, civic leaders, and activists. Mantati Mlochwa is an activist with the Women in Leadership and Development Organization. She explains how she uses new media in her work.
To learn how to embrace social media space to mobilize young people for whatever what I'm up to. So, for instance, the use of WhatsApp as a space of engagement. I run a WhatsApp group. Using this space, the WhatsApp group, we're able to then debate different political issues because the members or the people that are in the WhatsApp group are people from different political parties. So, we're able to debate, to drive engagement as well. I run a blog called The Radical Moment that we, I discuss policy issues. So it's one of those things we, whatever is available online where young people are found, we tap into it and use it to influence change. So that's how I'm using it in my small space as a young person.
Zinzile Ndewede is an activist and founder of the Center for Innovation and Technology. He is one of many individuals leading the new media revolution in Zimbabwe and helping to put the spotlight on matters of national interest.
I use social media for two main reasons. To get information on what is going on. I think the first thing that I do in the morning when I wake up is go on Twitter to find out the news from main news. I also use social media to create awareness on issues to do with could be human rights, could be, politics, could be things that are happening. If I go around, I see something, I take a photo and I tweet about it. So basically, I use social media to create awareness, to inform people on what is going on, to complain and probably sometimes to just make people aware that there's something that is happening. But also, I use social media to mobilize an opinion, to mobilize resources and all those kind of things.
One of the innovative platforms using social media for civic engagement is run by a young activist called Munya Dodo, otherwise known as Munya Blogo. He runs the platform Open Pali, which has been making inroads among the young and serving new media.
We are a monitoring platform. We monitor parliament. We try to hold our parliamentarians to account. We try to aggregate information from parliament to young people using social media. Open Parliament is an open data project, so we aggregate information that comes from parliament. We live tweet parliament sessions, portfolio committee hearings. We live stream them to our community and allow young people access into the corridors of power and give them full access to what ordinary people or what politicians get up to when they're in parliament. It allows them to participate vicariously through social media.
One of the politicians using social media is the mayor of Masingo, Hubert Fidze. He is a member of the opposition MDC Alliance and also a winner of the Communicator of the Year Award for his effort in engaging his constituents. He shares his experiences using social media.
And you know, media as it can, as it shall assisted me in engaging and dealing with the issues of civil slavery with my residents in a way that we can interact anytime freely. Like in my case, I'm almost 200 WhatsApp groups, so which are coming from the various groups of communities, be they the community in general, churches, artists, schools, etc., etc. So what they simply do is they relay their issues to the WhatsApp groups, then I pick up from there, then work out on the problems that could have been within the city, and as far as self-slavery is concerned.
Okay. Once elected to public office, communication helps enhance transparency among politicians and civic leaders. Social media has its downside, including the potential to spread fake news or to become a nuisance for some subscribers. But observers in Africa are watching to see if the new platforms will boost civic engagement and create new models for facilitating social dialogue. That's especially the case in Zimbabwe, which is trying to reform its political system in an era of rapidly growing internet usage.
That was reporter Addie Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
It appears the sudden peace between Ethiopia and Eritrea is picking up momentum politically, militarily, and financially. Although there was no immediate confirmation, the pro-government Eritrean press agency says the country has pulled troops back from the border as a gesture of reconciliation. Border issues fuel tensions between the two countries for the past 20 years. Ethiopia has named its new ambassador to Eritrea, reciprocating Asmara's move earlier this week. And the first commercial flight between the two countries in 20 years are yielding a strong sign of confidence in the rapprochement. The flights yesterday to Asmara contained numerous businessmen and Ethiopian Airlines chief executive officer Tewolde Gebremariam, who told Reuters that he is already in talks to acquire a stake in Eritrean Airlines. Ethiopia's new central bank governor has promised to be more responsive than his predecessor to the business community's complaint that government policies were too conservative. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yuli in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Wojtek Zorniak, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
More than 600,000 people died from malaria last year. Most of those were children. But you can help protect your family with some simple steps. Mosquitoes transmit malaria. Therefore, try to avoid being bitten. Empty all containers of standing water. water jugs, bottles, cans, and containers that livestock drink from can be breeding grounds for thousands of mosquitoes. Clean your roof of any rubbish where water can collect. Empty any ditches or holes of standing water. Avoid going out when mosquitoes feed, at dusk, overnight, and early in the morning. Sleep under insecticide-treated bed nets.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.